for oral history 2 for National Council of Jewish Women on Tuesday, March 19th. All right, would you like to tell me a little bit now about your immediate family in Europe and as they came to not so
actually, I don't remember anything about Europe because I was the infant. I was about 4 when we came here in 1970. In 1903, I was 4 years old. I was the infant at the time, one of 5. Father was always a sick man. He was a carpenter by trade. And like many people, like most at that time, a hard time making a living, which was nothing unusual. His whole life was his religion, his God. Nothing else mattered. God, wife, and children, in that order, gave us everything he could, which was all the love that he had and all the wisdom that he had from his religion. He couldn't give us much more. We all worked very, very young and worked through our youth, all of us. The boys, with the help of God, did get to college. The girls never did. The girls had to work to help the boys go through school. It wasn't necessary for girls to have a college education 70 years ago. And I don't think that we were that unique. I think that at that time it was an accepted thing.
What was the name of the town in Europe that your parents came from?
Chibrin. I don't know if you can spell it. You can sneeze it. I don't know if you can spell it.
In what country was it?
It was in Lutte. As a matter of fact, I think it was one time it was considered a Kibbutz. Something about that in the records that someone had discovered that this particular town was a Kibbutz. I don't know how
started it as a cooperative kind of
thing. I don't know when it was or when it came into being, but I have since heard that I was born on a kibbutz, which would be very interesting, a Russian kibbutz. Mm-hmm. There was no way to make a living there. Had father been able to make a living in Russia, he would never have come to America because his whole life was his religion. And since he couldn't make a living there and they wouldn't let him live like a human being, he came out to Seattle.
Came directly to Pittsburgh.
Directly to Pittsburgh.
And where and what part of Pittsburgh did you live?
2200 Center Avenue, initially. I think he said he built 2 rooms on somebody else's property so we would have a place to live for a whole year, free rent. That's how they've been in those days. And tobacco, stogie makers, seemed to be the simplest way to try to earn a living. And for a few years, I think, maybe 2 or 3 years, that's how we lived. I had an older sister and brother who were able to make stories, and brother would sell them and bring a few nickels home, and that's how we managed.
Did they make them at home or in the factory?
Well,
in there
was a little room. No, the little room that they used to make the stories in. And as best I can remember, I think that many people had that little room.
As part of their own room.
They had this, and we had one outsider working, a sister and brother, and we youngsters stripped the tobacco for them. We fixed the tobacco so they could go ahead with it. But this is how it was until my 16-year-old brother decided that he didn't want to do this. He wanted to get out of the business world. This wasn't the way he wanted to live. And that created many problems, because father, aside from the fact that he wouldn't have considered working on the Sabbath, he didn't want money coming into the house for the Sabbath work. He couldn't handle that, no way. And at that time, my older sister was begged to ask Morris to please leave home if he had made this decision, and he was sure this is what he wanted to do. It was a very serious, it was a crisis in our home, because the young man walked out when he turned 16, and he really never came back to us. Although he would visit, we knew that we had lost this beautiful person, and it was a sacrifice. that my mother and father had made. Father, of course, for his God, but Mama because of Papa. She couldn't go against his feelings of religion. The terrible thing was that we had uncles around who were awaiting their wives and their families who were in on this too, and they, if Father would have been able to be quieter, the uncles wouldn't in any way, because our family seemed at that time to be the lead family of a whole group that were coming on. And had Mark been able to go to work on Shabbat, well, then the others would have followed suit, and this would have been a terrible tragedy to the whole clan. They would rather not have come here than have to come into this kind of a situation. And I'm sure that I'm not speaking as anyone that's strange to this. There are many people who experience the same thing. Maybe not as strongly as we did, but as time went on, we realized that because of this Sabbath break, that we lost this brother. And it was a pity. He was a tremendously beautiful human being.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about your own personal school
I only went as far as the eighth grade. Yeah.
Which school did you go to?
I went to Rose Street School. And I went to a Raleigh High School for a couple of months, but walked away from it, I think, because I could get a job November and December. I worked at Lucas Store over the Christmas holiday, so I worked day and night. And it meant nothing to me. I wasn't concerned about working. All I wanted was to please Mama. And I was able to do that. Mama didn't know that I'd walked away from school until a truant officer came 2 months later. I took the books and went to work with it every day. And worked in Grar's Bake Shop for years. From the time I was 13 years old, I worked in Grar's Bake Shop every night with Friday. It was a good life. It was an interesting life.
What kind of a store was Bucas?
Bucas was a general department store on the corner of Market and Fourth, perhaps. It was there for years. Bucas.
Was there anything especially interesting in school when you were in?
Nothing at all. Nothing. You just simply went to school and you worked, and after school you went to work.
Do you have any memories in terms of the health or medical care situation? I think you referred before when we were talking about the pneumonia situation.
My brother's pneumonia.
What kind of medical care were the family get?
Well, I don't think that they got anything. I don't know what you mean by the question of medical care.
I mean, was there a family doctor in the immediate...
Dr. Greffin was our doctor. I don't know if he was at that time or if he was our doctor when I remember. And at that time, you speak of medical care or whatever, life was much simpler. You didn't have anything, but you didn't need anything. You didn't know you didn't have it. It was very simple. Nobody had any more than you did. If they had, they were hiding it too. You didn't know that anyone had anything that you didn't have. You came home, and if your mother was smiling, then you were happy. And God forbid if she didn't smile, you weren't even alive, because your whole life depended on her smile, on pleasing her and making her happy. And you couldn't feel badly toward a father who could give you nothing because the man was sick.
How long did your father live?
I never remembered Father without coughing. He had asthma to a point where he kept the whole neighborhood away. No one slept in our neighborhood because my father coughed night
and
day.
And when did he die?
Well, he died after another day. He died 45 years ago.
And your mother about how many?
And the sweetest thought that I will have to my dying day are the thoughts of Mom and Papa. Nothing. I can't even think in terms of God without Mom and Papa coming in first.
Did you have other children in the family after you came to the United States?
Yes, three.
Three more?
Two lived. One child passed away. Died of diphtheria at the age of three. And my brother Samuel was there, and his own sister Mary. Mom was very young when she came to this country.
Do you remember anything about fun or recreational activities for your adolescent years, or only the working aspect.
No, well, to me, work was fun. Everything I did was fun. I never, if I was working, I didn't know it. Everything was okay.
Were there any kind of groups?
The socialist groups were around. There was nothing else around.
Did you participate in any of their activities?
Meetings? No, I did not participate in any of them. I didn't have time for participation. I worked there enough from the time I was 13 years old.
Let's go into your courtship and marriage.
I met my husband at the socialist camp, summer camp.
Where was that located?
Around
Pittsburgh.
Around Pittsburgh. I can't remember what name it was. Met him, I think, in July, and we were married the following February. And that was just before the accident of the first year old. And then February we broke out in April.
And where was he? Had he also been born in Europe, or had he
He was European. He was born.
Was he European?
Possibly 16 or 17. I was never sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone born over there ever knew a date because they were born before Yom Kippur or after Yom Kippur.
What was he doing at the time you were married?
He was importing fruit down in the produce yard by the carload. And that's what he did until 7 years ago. We went into a theater business.
So you lived? Did you live in Pittsburgh when you were first married then?
Yes.
Where did you set up your home?
Lived on Center Avenue, but moved out to Avalon Street, which is a beautiful neighborhood.
And you said?
Avalon, up on the hill.
Avalon.
Near Breckenridge, just at the turn of the hill. Next door to Cousin Bradford. And Rabbi Friedman, who was the first rabbi of Poland, from the school of Mary. Had lovely people.
Did you have a house there?
We owned a little home there. It was a 6 room house.
And when did your first child come?
The child came about 3 years after we were married.
And how many children did you have all together?
3. Daughter and 2 sons. 2 born in Pittsburgh and 1 in Rochester.
Okay, now what was the, you said 7 years after your marriage, and you went to...
Into the theater business.
And into Rochester. And how did he happen to pick?
His brother was in it, and he introduced him to it.
He owned the theater there?
He built the magnificent theater.
Now, were there many... How much of a Jewish community was there in Rochester when you got there?
Very little. Very, very little. There was no shul. The shul was built 2 years after we got there. And that little shul was supported by a community of about 6 different towns. Because it was just 1 or 2 in each little community. Rochester proper had about maybe 12 or 14 families. And that was a large
group. Yet your son came out a rabbi from
that. I realized very early that if I was going to raise Jewish children, I had to work very hard at it because we were surrounded by anti-Semites, by Ku Kluxers, by Jew haters. And it was very easy for them to hate the Jew because they didn't know them. All they had was what they had heard from their parents and whatever. I could say the church is not enough things, and I'm sure that's not good. So that we had an uphill battle, always. My daughter never had a Jewish child in the 12 years that she was in Rochester. She was a loner. My son did a little better. I think he had 2 or 3 children in his classes when he came here. But we just, I spent 20-some years across from the Catholic Church. This catechetical from the church. And all my children saw were the people going to church, this constant stream. And the shul only opened up for holidays or for yard signs, or for something special. Otherwise, it was closed. We couldn't afford to rent out any time. There weren't enough people.
Who used the connection services on the highway?
Well, they would bring somebody in from the community just to do that. And then there were a couple of men who were Beltsvillers who knew how to conduct services and did very well. I happened to have a child who at the age of 10 was begging for a bar mitzvah, which is a little bit rare. And I heard people say, you're insane. What do you want to teach him a dead language for? It's dead. Why can't you recognize it?
Where did he get his education? We brought
in for a young man, a young rabbi from Beaver Falls. Beaver Falls is a larger community. And he would come in 3 times a week and prepare my son for his bar mitzvah. And little did I know that it was so deep in his heart that he would one day follow through on this.
Now, in terms of the social life in the community, did Jewish families just socialize among themselves, or did you socialize with non-Jewish neighbors?
Well, initially, I think 50 years ago, I think that we pretty much hung together. The Goyim didn't want any parties. They didn't meet us. They didn't join us. And what really brought us together was the war. When our children went into the service and things began happening, and we were not Jews, we became human beings.
That's World War II, then.
World War II. We got people calling and inquiring about my son when he was in the service. I didn't think they were paying attention. It was a difficult life. I didn't say that I was a 24-hour-a-day mother. I was a 30-hour-a-day mother. I never stopped being a mother because I couldn't trust the people there. I remember a conversation I had with a doctor one time when I was very upset. And I said, I was doing the Hitler thing. I said, why, I can't even afford to die. I can't trust you with my children. And he looked at me so strange. He says, I can't do anything. He says, I want you to go see Dr. So-and-so. I says, I knew him when he was a kid. And I'm no crazier than you are, and you know it. I just can't trust you people with my children. I can't even die. Because you don't care what happens to us. And I do. And as it was a constant problem, and it was. I never gave up fighting. I never trusted them. I lived among them. We earned our living from them. They came with great big smiles, and I couldn't ever trust them.
When you had family vacations, did you...
We went together.
Go together?
The whole family went into a car.
To what areas?
To Atlantic City, to New York, to Chicago. But the family drove together and never to the vacation site.
Okay. Did you have any special hobbies in the years that...
Well, actually, I was a theater widow. I was a widow because of my husband's work. He worked every night. And I had to make a life for myself besides my children.
Reading. One of your main hobbies.
I did some reading at the time, but I was a little bit active in the council of Jewish women. We had a very nice council in Beaver Falls. And then when this thing came along with Hitler and whatever, I started beating the drums for Hadassah and was mainly instrumental, in creating the Hadassah group in Beaver Valley. Alice Markson was the head of the one in Beaver Falls. Her daughter-in-law was Marvis Dorothy Markson. And I beat the drums for the Lower Valley. We did a very good job. With Jewish National Fund, I worked very hard. Was chairman for something like 30 years. And it was something that I had to do regardless of what else was going to happen. If some of my Goshen friends want me to play cards, I said, yes, if you take me out for a couple of days. I have to get this and I can play with it. Because this had to be done and I never drove a car. And the Shiksa friends would take me to pick up my pushkas. And I was free. Free to do what I had to.
In the neighborhood, would you like to describe it a little bit, economically, culturally, or politically?
I don't think that I could describe anything there. I know that when I first came to Rochester in sister came down to take her little sister out with the children, drove into Beaver and saw a Ku Klux Klan demonstration in action, and I was petrified. I wasn't frightened of God, where had I come with my children? And I felt then that I could never trust the people that I was among. It was probably the last demonstration in the valley. I believe it was the last. I think if anybody would look it up in the records, they would find that was the last. But I saw a cross being burned on the Beaver County Courthouse yard. And I never got over it, never forgot it. However, I did find people there who didn't pay any attention to it. They just kind of did look the other way. And I couldn't understand how, perhaps because I had lived in the city.
You mean Jewish people or not
Jewish? Jewish people who didn't even pay any attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
How so what? Well, that so what attitude is fine if it isn't anything important. But, and maybe if you're born in the community, you can handle it because it's always been this way. And I had come in from the city. I wasn't very good in that place. But I was always on the alert. I don't think I ever trusted the people that I lived around. Always had a feeling that you better be careful here now.
What was the main industry? What did most of the people in there in the valley earn?
Well, Rochester was a railroad town.
Yeah.
And all of stove works was a very big thing. The fry glass work, this is fry glass. The fry glass work at that time was very big.
What did you say, stove?
Olive stoves. Olive stoves. And all of this has disappeared. The railroad has disappeared, and the olive store work, and the glass work, fried glass, has disappeared. This stuff was sent all over the world from Rochester. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a very busy town, a good town.
Okay, now, you told us about your organizational and community involvement in Jewish groups. Were there any non-Jewish groups in the community? And you told us about the effects of the war in your relationship. How about the Depression days or the Prohibition days? Do you have any memories of?
Well, the Depression days, I had very good memories of because they were very bad years. But actually, as bad as they were almost good years. There was a quietness. There was a peace. You live with your neighbor. You both ate the same carrot and the same and green onion and the same bit of lettuce. You picked it up in your backyard, and it really wasn't any problem. Your children helped you carry the water out to water the plants with, and you enjoy that little piece of parsley, that spray of parsley from the backyard in your little bit of soup. It was good, and you were able to buy milk for 25 cents a gallon, and you might not believe that even that was good. And what little money you had, you were able to stretch in all directions, and people had faith, and they had trust, and they had time to live with their neighbor and to enjoy their neighbor.
Did the Prohibition era affect
it never affected us at all. And our business was good enough that as soon as things began to open up, it opened up for us immediately. When they were bad, when there wasn't any money in their pocket, they certainly couldn't attend either. But as soon as things began to perk up, we got the benefits of it.
And how about the relationships with the employees and your husband?
It was a very good relationship.
Was his brother in the business there himself too?
Yes, he was there. He was there for 5 years after that.
But most of the other employees were non-Jewish?
All non-Jewish. We never had any Jewish employees.
Mm-hmm. Did any of your children work
theater? The whole family. We all worked. Selma wanted to go to Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Your daughter? Daughter wanted to go to Tech, and I took her job. She was cashier, and I took her job. And remained with it until I came to Pittsburgh. Came back to Pittsburgh. Got involved in the business, and of course, after Dad passed on, I had to. And just remained with it until we gave it up and turned it over. It was, I had very mixed feelings about my life there. It was a beautiful, rich life because I could make it there. Because I refused to be destroyed by what was around me. I wouldn't let them affect me the way they hoped they could. And I always had a neighbor across the street who was old enough to be my mother. couldn't say enough ugly things about me until she decided she wanted to be friendly with me. And when she decided, I couldn't keep her out of my house. She wouldn't leave me alone. And it was, she sat in my house and wept to a neighbor, to a friend of mine. She says, imagine me living across the street from her and not even letting her into my house for so many years. And we could have been such good friends. And before her life was over, she was kissing my hands for the kind of help that she was getting. But it was just, it was this kind of thing that you know is
there. It took
there.
How many years of her living?
It took 10 years before she came near me. 10 years. She would sit on her porch and laugh at me and make fun of me and my children. And I felt that cutting hate so deep.
What was it that made the change?
I never knew. She probably just decided, well, maybe it's time, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just never knew what happened. I knew the hate was there.
Would you like to express yourself on the contrasting the way that you were raised as to the way you raised your children, things that you purposely did differently or the same?
I don't know what I did because I was never my mother and my father. I wasn't worthy of either one of them because they were absolutely beautiful, saintly people. It wasn't because they wanted to be. They were in that position. There's no place for them to go. This is what they were. This is how they lived. As far as I was concerned, I think I did a fair job with my children. I tried very hard to make good people out of them. And of course, I wanted them to be very good Jews. But I tried very hard to make good human beings out of them. That seemed to be very important, especially where we were. Whenever the show was open, I took my children by the hand and they came with me. And they never balked. And in the community, when Jewish boys began marrying Shiksas, one particular one, the rabbi in Beaver Falls told me that he said to this, when Mrs. Huzik was taking her children by the hand and going to shul, they were going to play duplicate bridge, these parents, yes. And so maybe it made a difference.
Your children married while you were still in Rochester?
Yes.
And
yes.
They married people from other small towns.
Both married Pittsburghers.
Oh, Pittsburghers.
Uh-huh. Both married Pittsburghers.
Is your youngest son married too?
No, and I'm holding my breath. Uh-huh.
Now, how did they meet the Pittsburghers? Was there much interaction between
the one was in Pittsburgh, was living here, working here.
Uh-huh. Your daughter?
Yes, uh-huh. And so she met her husband here. But my son was looking for a Jewish mate, looking for a Jewish mate, and
what he found at school?
No, it was just someone said, why don't you call so and so, and that's how it happened. And
you know, I met your son in his college days. You know that.
Well, I thought that you were still living in Rochester. Yes, I thought that you were in school. At one time,
yeah, some
perhaps
of the other friends from Warren, PA.
Who were they?
Harry Siegel.
Harry Siegel.
I was going with them and knew that your son in that crowd.
Yeah.
Funny how lives and all that time I never knew you, and not until many years afterwards did I meet you and tie together.
You're just listening.
Yeah. All right, now in terms of the religious observance in your home, would you like to elaborate on that a little bit in the home in which you were raising your children?
Of course, it was nothing like my mother and father's. There's no question about that at all.
It was a kosher
home. But I do have to tell you that the first year that I came to Rochester, this is very important to me, that my father, who lived in shul and lived for the shul, and his mother had already passed on, and Papa would not speak Goyish. He would not speak English because it was Goyish. His whole life was so involved in him, in his God. Herr Pesel came down on the train. I don't know how he did it, but he came down the train to Rochester. And whenever Father sat down, wherever he sat down, he'd fall asleep. And the conductor realized that this little man was supposed to get off in Rochester. It was quite a piece out, and he stopped the train under a trestle under the Beaver Bridge. And Father got up and walked. If I take you there and show you, you'll not believe me.
He walked all the distance back?
Walked up this trestle, up over the bridge, and found me. And when he found my house, I think he was more dead than alive. Huh. Without a tongue, without speaking English, how he found me, only God knows, in a strange town. I don't know that.
And you didn't know he was going to come
I had
and
no
come
idea,
down
but perfect. You see, he came down to make sure that I had matzah for Pesach.
Mm-hmm. He brought
a 5-pound box of matzah for Pesach. When he walked into my house, on the dining room table was this huge box of Passover food that I hadn't even unpacked. That was brought in from the Beaver Falls because there's no store in Rochester. Well, he thought I'd gone off to some village and I won't even know it's Yom Tov. And how was he going to live if I don't have matzah in my house for Pesach? And that poor soul took a day off from his shul and from his life to make sure that I would have matzah. It was really the most touching thing that could be imagined. I don't know what kind of feeling poor Papa had about me that he thought that I wouldn't even observe Passover. I wouldn't have thought that he would feel that so strongly. I would have thought that maybe he'd say, well, she'll find some way to manage. But he had to make sure. He couldn't have rested. And how many sleepless nights he had over this, I'll never know. But when he came, thank God, that whole box of food was on the dining room table, and there were people in Beaver Falls who knew the time of day and knew how to take care of things, and Father had to make sure.
But you did have a kosher home, how did you manage on that?
It was very hard.
Where were you able to get kosher meat from?
Well, in Beaver Falls. Matter of fact, there were two butcher shops there. You never got what you wanted, or you came into the city and you bought. You came to the city on a Sunday or a Thursday, and you bought what you wanted. You see, it depends on what you want. If you don't have to have exactly what you want, you can manage wherever you are.
And how did you, since you didn't have the shul as an institution as such there, the Jewish holiday observances?
They had a room that they used to meet in until they built the shul. The shul, the idea of the shul was already pretty well underway before we got that.
But I meant, how did your family fit in terms of religious observances and the holidays? Did you center things more around your own home, or was there enough other in the community that you had some community kinds of observances?
No, the shul was there a year, 2 years after we got into it. A year after we got into Rutgers, the shul was built. And I had influence on them, and my children was not proud at all. They grew up in the Rochester shul.
Yeah, but I mean in terms of the kind of holidays that you celebrate in the homes, like
Actually, the holidays would have been celebrated more in the home, but we were invited into the city to my aunt's and my uncle's homes, and we were very, very good guests. We were wanted, and we were needed, and we were loved. And my children could come for all the holidays.
That strengthened.
So it did strengthen.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a kind of a overall looking back. How do you view your personal accomplishments, successes, and failures? That's a pretty big order, but I just like to think. Is that right?
I don't even understand the question properly. I don't view them as anything. I don't pay any attention to them. I just take them straight out of school.
But in terms of the way your children are following
I'm very grateful that they are doing as well as they are. I think that my children are respected as human beings, which is very important to me. And I hope that my grandsons will be respected as human beings. I don't really understand the question. I don't know. I'm comfortable in my life, very comfortable. I'm self-sufficient and self-sustaining, for which I'm very grateful. And my children seem to have a tremendous amount of respect for me. Tremendous amount of respect for me.
How many grandchildren do you have?
Six grandsons.
All boys?
Six grandsons. I have a grandson who brought me a magnificent orchid last summer. It says, this is for the oldest queen in America. Now, no one can be any more than that. And, think that all in all, I probably had a fairly good life.
How many boys does the Mickey Spectrum have?
Mm-hmm.
Is the boys, and the daughter has two.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about socializing today among families or and individuals as compared to the kind of environment in which you grew up here?
Well, I think that perhaps when I was younger, that the whole family was one unit and everything worked around the word family, everything was around mom and dad. And today, of course, that is the same. Today, even children don't have a family. And I think that's very sad. I think it's sad that the children think they don't need their parents, and perhaps the parents think they don't need their children. And I'm afraid it works both ways. I can't understand how parents can get that far from their children and understand them, or vice versa. I liked the idea of homes having additions put on for aunts and uncles and grandparents. I think it was a healthy thing for them. Of course, it's an entirely different pattern today. Parents are put into the reviews, ones and twos and perhaps more. And children go off in their direction when they're 17, 18, 19 years old. Go up into their own apartments. They don't need mom and pop anymore. They're through with the bottle. And I think that's where he's at. And I think that's one of the weakest points in our society. And I feel like that is strong.
How about culturally, in terms of the things that you, family or individuals, do in the community? Is there more of a outgoing into other areas outside of the Jewish family life today? How do you feel about that?
I'm not sure what your question is.
Today's families and youth certainly take part in more community cultural kinds of activities outside.
Well,
of the
I think that perhaps there are more things that they can get involved in. I think that's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is where their interests lie. This is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I'm just not sure about what it's all about. I don't understand too much of it. I think that life was simpler when there wasn't so many areas in which to fly and to run. To address yourself to. And I'm still not sure where they're going or what they're doing. Of course, there are that many more problems, many more things to get involved in. The Soviet Jewry is a very, very serious thing. Getting Jews out of Iraq and Syria is a very serious thing. Working as hard as you can for the Dawson Jewish National Fund is very serious and very important. And yet, you have people who went through the Warsaw Ghetto that are still living in Poland. I'll never understand it. When I asked a relative why she was living in Poland, she said that she didn't want to live in Israel because it was a sea of hate, a Yom Kippur. And I said, so how can you live in a Jewish cemetery? Well, for that, she had no answer. But she was living until she died. In the Jewish cemetery, she couldn't understand my question. And then it was her husband who was killed in the Warsaw Ghetto. I don't understand.
Did your family take part in any political activities in your younger days?
Never
or your children's younger days?
Never political, no. To my husband, the word politics was a bad word. It was a dirty word. We just weren't like those kind of people, and I wish we had been. I really think today that every normal human being, every normal intelligent person should know where they're going to go. They should be asking questions. It's not healthy for them not to. I've been writing letters to the president and to Kissinger and to Golda Meir and to Schweiker, but my children, maybe they will, but I would like to see them do well. I think that politics needs more participation from other people, not just politicians.
How about the environment in terms of Jewish and non-Jewish communities and immediate surroundings that your children are living in today as compared to the where you grew up or where your children grew up?
Well, I grew up in the
ghetto.
It was no problem. I knew that going to the Jews would have a foot on top of beer. So it was no problem for me to see where the hatred came from. But you were Christ killer, you always knew your children were the Christ killers. They didn't hide that feeling. And I must have gotten it from someplace. You were separate. I felt that the protection that I had as a child came from my mother and father. It was like that bit in Ethics of Our Fathers where you build a fence around the Torah. My mother and father built a fence around us and protected us from all evil on the outside. When I came into the house, I was safe. Okay. And I felt that security.
Now, how compare that with the kind of environment in which your own children grew up in your home in Rochester?
Well, I tried to build that fence around my children. I tried to give them that security because as best I was able to, I want them to know that they would have to be big enough and strong enough to protect themselves because the world wasn't going to be a problem.
Now, how are they raising their children? Did they?
Probably the same way. I'm not sure. Of course, their children are in more Jewish community than mine, and they don't have the fear that I have. It may be that today you don't see that hatred. It's not so apparent. I think that today a Jewish child can get more of an education than he used to be able to do.
Your grandchildren who grow up in the suburban community, are they also living in a fairly Jewish community, or are they just a more general community?
I'm not sure what they're feeling.
Are they in McKeesport proper, or are they now in White Oak?
Certainly McKeesport proper. How big are they together? And the involvement that they have been, I mean, with the therapies and with the AZAs and with the B'nai B'rith and all of that, they've been
really
able to circle around among Jewish people, among Jewish children, if they want to. Of course, if they don't want to, we can't do anything with them.
They also have to have contacts with other small communities
in the youth organization. In the summers, they go to camps there together, which is very good for them.
Well, you set them a good example in that. You met your husband at a summer camp.
Yes.
They follow your good example.
I don't know whether that's why they're doing this, but
I hope you remind them of it, though, so they keep their
eyes
open.
Well, I throw a few things out at them, too, when I get a chance. I'm very happy that a grandson will say, "Ma'am, do me a favor, can I come and have dinner?" And I'll say, "Sure." And he comes and he sits with me for $5, and I think that's wonderful. And he wants to listen to my brother medicines. And I think that if he can stand me for $5, I have a grandson. And that's very important.
All right, now, Pittsburgh's Jewish community life, now that you're back in Pittsburgh, how do you view the community life in the Pittsburgh Jewish community and its relationship to the total Pittsburgh community?
I don't know too much about the total community. I know that when I came back here, I wasn't hungry for things Jewish. I was greedy for them. I went from club to club, from show to show, from book review to book review. I just couldn't get enough.
All right, do you want to tell us the kind of things that you are active in now here?
I don't think I'm doing anything.
You're active, you're still with your Hadassah group, and in the region on that that you had been, and you're active in the senior citizens at both the Y and the N. You want to tell us a little bit about the groups that you...
Well, I've turned event classes in both places. And I'm very pleased that I came and that they were accepted. I think it's given me a new lease on life because I don't just read things. I know it's the absolute in the corner of stuff that I sort out what I want and what I need and other people seem to be pleased with what I'm doing, and that makes me very happy.
Now, this has nothing to do specifically with this interview, but I'm just curious myself. Do you think the other people in your groups relate more to you as one of them, or do they relate better or differently when they have an outside senior citizen group person leading?
I can't answer that question, I mean, because they seem so happy with me. Uh-huh. I really can't answer it. As someone just said the other day, well, she puts a lot of work in it, doesn't she? She does a lot of work in it. Which means they're beginning to appreciate that I'm really working at it.
Actually, I personally think it's a positive thing when one of their own and their peers conduct the group. I think that's actually more of a high-level activity than when a younger person is brought in to teach.
I don't think that a younger person understands our problems and our thinking. Mm-hmm. And I think that when someone says something to me about how do you know, and I say, I don't know, that's what we get together trying to